It's time to get inside the Giants huddle.
Huddle up, huddle up, huddle up.
On Giants.com.
Here we go.
And the Giants mobile
app. Get them in there, let's go.
Part of the Giants podcast network.
Welcome to the new edition of the Giants Huddle podcast. John Schmelk with you. As the Giants start to make some decisions in regards to their front office, I figured it's a good time to take a look at what they might do in the NFL draft. And we're not really going to focus on Giants needs today, folks, but we're going to try to set the stage for what this NFL draft has to offer, which of course will dictate what NFL teams are able to do. You can only, of course, pick the prospects that are available. And to do it, two friends of the program, you saw them on the Giants Huddle podcast a couple different times last year. First, Tony Pauline from Pro Football Network. Tony, good to see you again, pal.
Thanks for having me back. It's good to be here.
Absolutely. And then Eric Crocker, Croc, he's the host of the Locked On NFL draft podcast. And I know he does 49ers stuff too. Croc, it's good to see you again, man. How was your season?
It's still going. So I think that's good. You know, being able to cover a playoff team. We were worried for a little bit, but they squeaked in.
Absolutely. The 49ers, they'll be taking on the Dallas Cowboys this weekend. Should be one of the best games of the weekend, actually. As a reminder, folks, you can find the Giants Huddle podcast at giants.com/podcast on the Giants mobile app and all your favorite podcast platforms. Make sure you go check it out. All right, boys, let's start here. And Tony, just to remind folks, how many years have you been doing draft stuff now? Just so we kind of, you know, set that baseline here.
Too long, before the internet. Probably about 1997, I got into it officially. I actually started working with beat writers in the New York area, New York Daily News, Paul Medell and Brian Burwell, actually back in the late 80s, feeding them information. So it's been a long time. I had a lot more hair on my head when I started back then.
What year were you born, Croc? Just want to get that out there.
1987. So he's cutting it close there with when he started.
And I'm 81, so I think I'm safe there. All right, perfect.
97, I think I was in like the fifth grade, fourth or fifth grade. So
Croc and I are on the playground, and Tony's, you know, trying to find out some, you know, random defensive tackles injury that the combine in Indianapolis. All right, here we go. Let's start here, guys. Obviously, every draft is dictated by the quarterbacks, who's available, whether or not a team might want to trade up for one, when they might go in the draft. So, Tony, let's start here. Put this quarterback class into context. That fans can have an idea, maybe compare it to past years, just what you think of this year's quarterback class and how that might dictate how draft night goes.
If I had to use one word, excuse me, it would be uninspired. This is an uninspired class. These are guys that have a lot of upside, but they're not NFL ready. These are guys who I think are going to be overdrafted and have great potential, but we could see a lot of bust factor if they're forced into the game underneath center too early. You know, you got a guy like Malik Willis from Liberty, tremendous athlete, big time arm, makes some jaw dropping throws on occasion, but he played at Liberty and, you know, he kind of runs around like a chicken with no head at times. He's got to learn to play the NFL game. You got Carson Strong out of Nevada, who probably is one of the best arm talents that we have seen in the NFL draft the past 15 to 20 years. He hurls the ball down the field with ease, 60, 65 yards with speed. But he played in a pistol offense, which doesn't help his never developed him as a passer. He also has a significant knee injury from high school, which has raised some red flags and is going to have to be checked out. Kenny Pickett is the guy that everybody loves to talk about. Did a great job going back to Pitt, has soared up draft boards. But, you know, he doesn't have a great NFL arm and he's got small hands. I mean, his hands measure just over 8 inches from what I'm told.
Wow.
And 9 inches is the demarcation line for teams that want NFL quarterbacks. I am told, though, that Kenny Pickett, believe it or not, has double jointed thumbs, which makes it easier for him to grip the football. So that whole Kenny Pickett hand size saga is going to be one to watch as we move towards the draft in April.
Croc, your thoughts on the group?
Yeah, you know, I agree with a lot of what he said. You know, when you look at this group, you know, who's the guy that has the high upside as well as the productivity to back it up? You know, and when you look at this class, especially the previous class, I think everybody knew, okay, you got Trevor Lawrence, you have Justin Fields. Those were the big polarizing names. And then obviously guys like Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, and Mac Jones came on late in the process. I feel like all of those guys would go before any of the quarterbacks in this class. And that's unfortunate because when you look at the top of the draft, there are a lot of quarterback needy teams. And this isn't quite the class to reach for a quarterback. Now, we've all seen guys get bumped up, you know, and I remember being a part of that 2013 rookie class where you had, you know, Geno Smith and EJ Manuel. Those were the first two quarterbacks taken off of the board. A lot of people are comparing that class to this class in the sense of how high quarterbacks probably should go. But again, it's a quarterback driven league. So I'd assume that some of these guys might be bumped up. And I think there have been things that happened in the bowl games that add even more questions. Just, you know, seeing a guy like Matt Corral go down with injury. You've had a lot of other guys talk about guys opting out. You see Kenny Pickett, he opted out of the bowl game. So it's curious to see how these guys go about this process. But this quarterback class, you know, like Tony said, it is a little uninspiring.
Croc, do you
let me just add one thing? You know,
hey, go ahead, Tony, please.
All these guys except for Matt Corral are going to be at the Senior Bowl. And that is going to be a determining factor because the Senior Bowl, and I've been to every Senior Bowl practice since the year 2000, the Senior Bowl is a kingmaker at the quarterback position. You've seen it time and time again. Carson Wentz, Phillip Rivers, David Carr. So these guys, a lot of their draft grades and where they end up in the draft will be determined during the 3 days of practice at the Senior Bowl, because the Senior Bowl, what they do is they run NFL-type systems. The quarterbacks are made to throw NFL-type passes. A lot will be determined. Look at Mac Jones last year. I mean, There were a lot of Mac Jones detractors going to the Senior Bowl week last year, including yours truly, and then Mac Jones just blew it up and had three phenomenal days of practice, not just throwing the ball, but being a leader and really sort up draft boards after the week of Senior Bowl practices. That is what the opportunity will be presented to the quarterbacks, and all the top ones are going except for Matt Corral at the Senior Bowl at the end of this month.
All right. It's way too early, but we'll have fun anyway. Prediction business. Do any quarterbacks, and if so, how many do you think go in the top 10? And do you think there could be a trade up into the top 10 for a quarterback, or is this not the year for that? Croc, let's start with you.
Just because quarterbacks, they're just propped up, like, you know, every single class pretty much, except for probably that 13 class. So I'm going to assume, yes, you know, when you look at a guy like Kenny Pickett, I think having the athleticism that some of these teams are starting to covet, you know, being able to kind of let the ball rip a little bit, you know, he's more of the seasoned vet, you know, more of what you're getting from him as opposed to some of the other quarterbacks in this class. And, you know, obviously it's still early in the process and we'll start to figure things out as the draft process plays out. But if there is one quarterback that is going to go top 10 that may have the fewest questions, I would say it's probably Kenny Pickett.
Don't?
Yeah, I'm going to say no, only because there's a lot of good defensive players. I don't think anybody's going to trade up to get a quarterback into the top 10. I think what may happen is if a team really wants a quarterback, they may actually trade out of the top 10 and then move into the bottom half of round one and take the quarterback. You know, if you draft for need and you pass up best player available, you tend to rue it, you know, 2 or 3 years down the line. And I agree with Eric said. I mean, it is a quarterback draft needy league, a quarterback. There are teams at the top who need quarterbacks, and it's a quarterback league. But I mean, these quarterbacks, as far as I'm concerned, on my board, are so far, already so far lower than the top 10. I just don't see any quarterback going in the top 10 right now.
On your overall top 100, Tony, where do you have your first quarterback pop up?
Number about 28.
Oh, wow.
Because there are a lot of good defensive players. There's some good offensive linemen. And really, it's also, like I said, yeah. I mean, if I'm going to use one word to describe the quarterback class, it's going to be uninspired.
I have a question for you.
Yeah, go ahead, Tony. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, real quick, you know, again, you talked about how the Senior Bowl can really help prop guys up and kind of elevate their draft stock at different times. And we saw that, I think, Baker Mayfield going into that offseason, he wasn't supposed to be this highly regarded draft pick. But then all of a sudden, draft day comes around. He's the number one overall pick over guys that people assume would go much higher, like Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, who had all the physical tools, Josh Rosen, who was, quote unquote, the most pro-ready guy. Do you think that maybe a guy can have a bump like that? Maybe not to number one overall, but potentially just into the top 10. And if so, you know, maybe who is that guy?
Possible. It's possible. I mean, like, if they go, they have Phillip Rivers is another guy. Phillip Rivers, when he entered the Senior Bowl, was a fringe first round pick, ends up as what, the top third pick of the draft, fourth pick of the draft. I forget it right now, because of his great week of the Senior Bowl. Remember, it's not just throwing the ball, but it's the leadership they show. Carson Wentz, the way players gravitate around you. Same thing with Mac Jones last year, Baker Mayfield. You brought up a perfect example. Is it possible? It absolutely is possible because of what the Senior Bowl brings and the opportunity that it affords these guys.
Tony, is that the lowest you've had the first quarterback on your board in recent years? Can you compare it to a different class? I know Eric mentioned, you know, back in 2013.
I think 2013 was even worse because I was not a fan of VJ Manuel, not a fan of Geno Smith. So I think those guys were slightly lower rated than the present guys that I have on my board.
Is this similar to the Haskins, Daniel Jones year when those are the first two quarterbacks off?
Well, Daniel Jones went quite early.
Going into that draft, where did Haskins and Jones hit on your board when you're going?
I would say, to be honest with you, Daniel Jones and Dwayne Haskins were rated higher than any of the guys on my board right now, because I liked Dwayne Haskins a lot. Has not panned out some of his own doing. And I like Daniel Jones. So both of those guys would have been graded higher than any of the quarterbacks right now, because especially with Jones and what Haskins showed, I thought they were more NFL ready. These guys, except for Kenny Pickett, you know, need a lot of work before they're going to be able to step under center or behind center in the league. And even with Kenny Pickett, he's had a great year. Let's see what type of arm he has during Senior Bowl practices. Can he make those NFL type throws?
Got it. Croc, let's start here at the top of the draft board. Who are your true blue chip prospects in this draft class? The guy, if you're picking one or two, you would feel great about picking this guy. And you're like, I'm confident I'm getting the future. Not just Pro Bowler, but potential all pro.
You know, I think it has to start with Kayvon Thibodeau. Now there's going to be questions about, you know, what defensive scheme does he fit in? He's a stand-up edge rusher. Is he only going to be suited for 3-4 defense? Can he play 4-3 in for a defense? Those are going to be some of the questions, and maybe some of the strength against the run game, but just his physical ability and upside, being able to explode off of the edge, that bend that he has, I mean, just that tenacity. I think one thing that jumped out to me just watching him was his pursuit. You know, I thought that was a big thing, to have that athleticism as well as the relentlessness to chase guys down from behind. He's the guy that has a lot of the high-end upside traits that a lot of teams are going to start to covet.
Tony, how about you? Who else do you have in your elite group?
Yeah, it absolutely is Thibodeau for me. I mean, he's higher than Aiden Hutchinson and George Karlaftis. I mean, he is an explosive, very sudden guy. He's got a thin body, but he's strong for his size. He doesn't back down against blocks. He's able to hold his ground. You know, as Eric was saying, his pursuit, the ability to slide down and chase the ball carrier from behind. He's a one-man wrecking crew. I like Aiden Hutchinson, but Thibodeau is much more sudden. He's much more violent. He's got much more quickness. I also think he's more versatile. I think you're going to get more production out of a Thibodeau standing him over tackle, as well as coming out of a three-point stance. Maybe to start off with, you want to use him in a one-gap system because of the fact that he's not the biggest guy in the world, but he's got growth potential. I just absolutely love his game, and he's far and away. I like Hutchinson, but I really love Thibodeau.
So yeah, John. Yeah, Thibodeau, he reminded me a lot of Josh Allen coming out of Kentucky, where it was a guy where I kind of questioned a little bit, you know, his ability to be versatile against the run game. But at the NFL level, that hasn't really been a big issue for Josh Allen. He's still been extremely productive when he's on the field. I think Thibodeau, he's similarly that type of guy that has, you know, the good production. He dealt with an ankle injury, and I was assuming, you know what, he doesn't have anything to play for. Most people are saying already he's the number one overall pick. Why come back? He came back anyways. And I think even seeing the guys do that, like, you know, come back to a situation where he probably could have opted out and nobody would have batted an eye, it tells me that he loves the football game and that he's wired the right way.
How much of a no-brainer right now, guys, do you think Thibodeau is as a number one pick? Or are there, barring an injury to Thibodeau, assuming his medicals all check out and he's healthy, do you think there's a chance a player could surpass him on some team's boards? And if so, Tony, I know you mentioned Hutchinson already. Is there anyone else that you guys would even consider could be in that mix for first overall? Croc, let's start with you.
I want to go first because Tony touched on something. He said you don't want to draft for need. But when you look at the Jacksonville Jaguars, who, you know, they have a quarterback who's running for his life most of last season, and everybody's saying, hey, you know, they got to get him some help, you know, whether it's at the offensive line, at the skill position. He's going to need some help at the offensive line. Is an edge rusher going to help your franchise quarterback that was running for his life for an entire season? Or do you want to go offensive line? Now, I don't know if the offensive lineman is going to go that high. There are a couple of guys that are really good, but maybe not number one overall. So do they trade back? If not, then maybe they do just say, hey, we're going to go ahead and just take the best available player. And even then, now you're pairing him with Josh Allen, who you just took top 10 a couple years ago. I think there is a scenario where maybe he goes number one. I don't know if anybody else would go number one, but I don't know. Jacksonville, they're in a unique situation there.
Yeah, I think they're in a no-win situation, actually, unless they could trade down because, you know, you mentioned Josh Allen. They also took Clavon Chase on a couple of years ago and moved him to a 4-3 type outside linebacker, which I don't think is best for him. They took the defensive tackle from Florida, Bryan, a couple of years before that. They've expended a lot of draft capital in that defensive line, that defensive front seven. Thibodeau, in my board, is far and away the best player. Is he going to be the first pick? Well, I want to wait and see who Jacksonville assigns as a coach, what direction they're going. And I agree, you know, with what Eric said. You took Trevor Lawrence last year. He's running for his life. You got to get him some weapons. You got to get him some production. I mean, if I'm the Jacksonville Jaguars, I'm maybe picking up the phone right now, you know, when they get settled and seeing if one of those teams sitting behind them may want to take move up to get a Kayvon Thibodeau so I can take an Evan Neal later on to get some protection for Trevor Lawrence. Thibodeau is the number one player on the board. You know, I don't know that he's going to be the first player selected. We'll have to wait and see what happens in Jacksonville.
All right, you guys mentioned the offensive line, so let's go there. Evan Neal seems to be, based on what I've looked at, the consensus number one offensive tackle. Let's put him into context, Tony. Compare him to some of the offensive tackle classes we've seen in years past. You had the big one where you had the four guys in the top 15, Andrew Thomas, Tristan Wirfs, Michael Becton, Jedrick Wills. All four of those guys have ended up hitting. They're all pretty darn good NFL players. Just compare, where would Neal land in some of these past draft classes? Is he a true top five pick? Is he like maybe more of like a 10 to 15 guy, but he's moved up because it's a weaker overall class? Just tell me where Neal is and then the rest of that top offensive tackle group.
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I think he's going to be overdrafted. When you compare it to the class that you just mentioned, Thomas, Wirfs, Becton, and the kid from Cleveland, I think he's kind of towards the back of that pack. He's very good. Played right tackle in 2020, did a good job at left tackle. There are some people I talked to in the league who feel that he's actually best at guard in the NFL. Yeah. I don't know about that. I always feel if a guy can play left tackle, you keep him out at left tackle. I think it's a situation almost like what we talked about with quarterbacks. Neal's good. He's got a great upside. But because of the need and because of really the lack of outstanding offensive talent anyway in this draft, he's going to be overdrafted. He's going to go much earlier than people project.
How close, Tony, just in terms of raw draft grade, would Neal be to those two top pass rushers? If you mentioned the team is look, because by the way, it's not just Jacksonville, right? The Jets with their rookie quarterback, Zach Wilson, they might be looking for an offensive tackle there. We know the Giants are always looking for offensive linemen. So how close is his grade to that elite level where you have Thibodeau and then Hutchinson right below him?
Significantly lower. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I think Thibodeau is a, you know, you work for the New York Giants. There was a time when the New York in football, when the impact defensive player was the coveted position in the NFL draft. You know, Banks, Lawrence Taylor, those types of players. That is what Thibodeau brings. I think Evan Neal is significantly down the board when you compare him to, especially Thibodeau.
Your thoughts, Croc?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think there's going to be questions about whether Evan Neal is even the best tackle in this class when the draft process starts to play out. You know, there are other guys like Cross, you know, Ekwonu out of North Carolina State. Like, there are some other tackles that I think bring a little bit more athleticism. I think with Evan Neal, the thing that's going to be so intriguing is just flat out that just that size, right? He has a huge frame. But with that huge frame, there come some questions at times, especially at the tackle position, guys being able to win with leverage, be able to get underneath you, and then to start to see, like, okay, how well does he anchor down or his feet and change the direction? How well does he play against guys in space, especially against elite edge rush type guys? And, you know, we saw what type of guy game some of the edge rushers out of Georgia had in the national championship game, rushing off to the edge, being able to win with speed. I wonder about some of those things with Neal. Obviously, he's going to be a terrific prospect, but I think there's still a lot of room for growth with him.
So I guess my question then for both you guys, once you get past Neal, we're assuming he's going to be a top 10 pick, right? I think that's a safe assumption. Do you think there are other tackles in this class that could be worth a top 10 selection? Or are you getting to the point now, once Neal's off the board, you're doing a little reachy here and you might end up regretting what you're doing in the top 10?
Yeah, I don't think there's any top 10 offensive tackles. I like the offensive tackle class starting in the second half of the first round, really through the second day of the draft. Trevor Penning of Northern Iowa is a guy to keep an eye on. He's at the Senior Bowl. There are a lot of people who really like Trevor Penning. In fact, people I've talked to who think that Evan Neal will be a guard in the NFL believe that Trevor Penning is the top offensive tackle in this year's class. He's my number two rated tackle. Eric mentioned Charles Cross of Mississippi State. Rasheed Walker out of Penn State is another guy. Phenomenal left tackle, phenomenal pass protector. Just got to get a little bit stronger. Nicholas Petit-Frere of Ohio State, who struggled against Aiden Hutchinson in that Big Ten championship game, but he's still a big athletic guy who can play left tackle. Daniel Falele of Minnesota. A lot of good tackles, I believe, starting in the bottom half of round one through rounds two and three.
And another guy who's maybe not quite a tackle, but if you look at Kenyon Green from Texas A&M, you know, he's a guy who, you know, I put on three different games and he was playing three different positions. And then I hear that he also has taken snaps at center. So he's a guy, I don't know if he's going to quite have like the arm length that people are going to covet at the tackle position, but someone who can definitely play guard and potentially be a tackle, it could be him. And I mean, there were some questions about Tristan Wirfs and Rashawn Slater. Yeah. Would they be a tackle? Would they be a guard? Okay, they transition better as a guard to the NFL. They've both been definitely solid tackles in the NFL. I think Kenyon Green, again, not sure exactly where he's going to play. I think people are going to profile more as an interior offensive line, but he is someone in a pinch who can potentially play on the outside as well.
How do you see Green, Tony?
I like him as a guard. As some people say center, as Eric was saying, but I like him as a guard. I don't think he's a tackle. I mean, he was slated to play left tackle at Texas A&M this year. Then he got the transfer from Tennessee, Jameer Johnson, who actually started his college career at Rhode Island, who did a phenomenal job. They didn't have to move him out to tackle. I think he's best in close quarters, a small area blocker, and I think he'd be a dominant guard, maybe center in the NFL.
Interesting. You mentioned Cross, guys, and I think he's interesting. I did watch a couple of clips of him, and I think he's a very good foil to Evan Neal, who you mentioned is like 340 pounds. He's just this big tank out there. Cross is a guy that I saw some video. That guy can move. Yeah. And, you know, can you transform? And maybe you guys can talk about it in general. How much at offensive tackle now are you worried about just drafting, you know, the best athlete? And then you figure, look, if this guy's big and he can move and he's an athlete, we can train him to be a really good offensive tackle, even if he maybe isn't there yet. Like, for example, Colton Miller, right? He's a guy when he got drafted was raw as all hell. A lot of people thought, wow, why are you picking Colton Miller so high? Well, he's been trained now. And he's a pretty good off tackle in the NFL. So how do you guys view Cross it kind of in that crystal as you take a look at that? Croc, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, you know, I think just in general, the thing that helps him most is, and you talked about how well he moves his feet and his ability, even though he's lighter than a guy like Neal, to be able to anchor down and take on some of those bull rushes. I think he did a good job of that for someone that isn't as big in style as a Neal. Like Neal, watching him, he's like a big wall, and it was hard for guys to kind of just get around, and you definitely weren't going to just power through him consistently. I thought he had sometimes just losing his footing a little too much. Cross, I thought he was a little bit more consistent with being able to stay on his feet. But and also, I think the thing that jumped out to me the most was just that nastiness, like finishing off blocks. That was something I – from Neal, I thought I would see a little bit more of because of how big he was, but I saw it more from Cross. So I think there were some things that I like. You know, everybody knows, you know, once you get to the NFL, they're going to be a little bit more stickler as coaching, you know, with the coaching and technique and ability as well. So I assume that they're going to like the athlete that he is and be able to build on that as well.
Well, you know, it's funny, John, because you talked about, you know, how concerned are you about the guy being a good athlete and you turn him into a good offensive tackle? Why stop at offensive tackle? Let's look at quarterback. Let's look at cornerback. I mean, time and time again,
right, yeah,
guys are drafted based on their athleticism and we're going to coach them to be good football players. And it never happens. Now, as far as Cross is concerned, yeah, he's athletic. Yeah, he's mobile. I also like his fundamentals. He plays with good knee bend. He stays square. He keeps his feet moving. He plays in that Mike Leach high-powered aerial attack where they're always throwing the ball. He's got to get a little bit stronger. Here's something to keep an eye on, arm length. I'm told he has short arms. Ooh. So if his arms come in under 33 inches at the combine because he's not going to be at the Senior Bowl, that's going to be a red flag where teams say, we're not going to draft this guy as a left tackle.
And Tony, and guys, both of you guys will talk about this. At the tackle position now, a lot of those metrics, I think, are really – considered important because these guys have to block who really pound for pound, let's be honest, these defensive ends are probably the best athletes in the NFL. You know, guys like Myles Garrett, just given their size and strength and quickness, these are the best athletes on the planet, right? Like if LeBron James played in the NFL, people say put him at, you know, wide receiver or tight end. You put LeBron James as an edge rusher, guess what? He's going to dominate the game for you, right? So how much are those metrics now, Tony, talking to the people you do and then Eric, you know, doing a lot of the training you do, just essential to how these teams evaluate these offensive linemen?
Well, you want an offensive tackle that's got long arms because it's an added advantage. If you've got a guy that's got 33-inch arms versus a guy that's got 34.5-inch arms, that extra inch and a half can mean maybe getting your hand on Myles Garrett's shoulder pad and just riding him from his angle of attack to protect your quarterback. So it all is very important. I think the thing that is not as important as it is in the past, especially the tackle position, especially the left tackle position, is, you know, you always wanted your left tackles to be 6'4.5", 6'5", 6'6". I think teams are now more comfortable with offensive tackles that are 6'4", 6'3.5". Even, you know, you see them in New England, Isaiah Wynn, who was 6'2 and change. But if they can move, if they can get out laterally and they got long arms and they can punch their arms to get the pass rushers out of their angle of attack, they're okay with that.
Yeah, and I think also to add to that, just being able to keep a defensive end off of your body, right? You know, the NFL, everybody knows, especially in the trenches, it's all about, you know, leverage and being able to get underneath the guy, get underneath his pads, you know, having those long arms to be able to shield off a defender. I think that helps. And that's why they like those long arm edge rushers as well that can, you know, win with a one-hand stab. You know, you look at the offensive tackles, and I get to watch a good one in San Francisco, you know, with Trent Williams. One thing that he does, I mean, his hands, guys just can't get into his body, and he's able to win there just with his hands from a distance. So I think that when you watch the film and you see how he wins and how some of these tackles are winning by really keeping the distance between them and the defensive end, I think it's definitely a benefit.
All right, I want to go inside for a second. We mentioned the tackles. I've seen a couple guys with Tyler Linderbaum, who's the center out of Iowa, as a top 15 pick, maybe even a top 10 pick. I've been doing this, Tony, not as long as you have, but I never remembered a center going in the top 10. I don't think I've seen a center picked in the top 15 in probably 7-8 years, maybe even further than that. You probably have those numbers in front of you. I don't. Is that legit? Is Linderbaum that good of a prospect where he could come in here at the back end of the top 10 or between 10 and 15?
In my opinion, no. I mean, I think he's another guy who's just being overrated. I think it's a situation where, you know, the teams, especially here in New York, that need centers, you know, you read on the internet or even, you know, mock drafts, people talking about Linderbaum. Watch the Big Ten championship game. Watch what Chris Hinton of Michigan did to Linderbaum in the Big Ten championship game.
Okay.
I like Linderbaum. He's an explosive guy. He's heady. Good fundamentals, as Eric was talking about. Bends his knees, blocks with leverage, shows some ability on the second level. But too many times he's getting ragdolled in the middle of the line. As I've told people, especially Jet fans who like Tyler Linderbaum is not as developed at this point in his career as Nick Mangold was. And Nick Mangold was a late first round pick. I do think Linderbaum will end up as a first rounder, but I think it's in the bottom half of round one. In my opinion, it's not that he's a center. I don't care that he was a center. If he was a dominant center who just destroyed the opposition on every play, I could see him going top 12, top 10 potentially. But he's not that type of player. Again, go back and watch that Big Ten title game, what Chris Hinton of Michigan did to him.
Croc, you can add to that if you want, and I'm going to throw this out there too, because a lot of people put a lot of these clips on the internet, and I hate how people will try to scout players based on a couple of clips from one game.
Exactly.
It drives me nuts. The way Hutchinson played against Georgia, did that bother you enough where it impacted what you think of him, where he did, you know, had some issues, you know, being a consistent force in that game? Or do you think that has been overblown by the draft Twitterati out there?
I think definitely overblown by the draft Twitter. You know, they're going to overblow everything. As a lot of people say, Twitter is not a real place. You know, I do think there's a little bit to it, but not enough to like just completely drop his draft stock. It does make you go back and look at some of the other performances and where there's some, you know, inconsistencies maybe going up against strength, right? You know, when you go up against a Georgia team that's really strong in the trenches, I mean, shoot, look how they dominated Alabama down the stretch in that game and how nasty they were, guys finishing off blocks late. You know, they're just a kind of a different breed. So you want to just kind of take it with a grain of salt, kind of evaluate just that game, okay, what gave him issues, and then go back and see if those things were consistent throughout, not just this year, but maybe last year as well.
Tony, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, first of all, I thought Georgia had a great game plan. I mean, it wasn't just that they neutralized. They didn't just neutralize Hutchinson by blocking. They just had a great game plan to take him out of the game altogether, and they were just a much better team. But I agree with you. You know, I say watch the Big Ten title game with Charles Lindebaum and what Michigan was able to do with him, not just to base your opinion on Lindebaum on that, but that to me just shows that, you know, he's not worth all the hype as being a top 10 pick. But I absolutely agree. You know, there were some instances where players, Vernon Gulston, if you remember, beating Jake Long in that Michigan-Ohio State game, had four sacks against him, rose up draft boards, turned out to be garbage. I mean, literally. And everybody kept talking about that game against Michigan where he beat Jake Long, who was the first pick of the draft for four sacks, and it never panned out. So, yeah, you cannot draft a player off of a single game. I bring up the Big Ten title game because a lot of people just watch one game and develop an opinion on a player, which is wrong.
All right, Croc, who else do you like as some of your guys that you would have near the top of this draft class in your top 10?
Oh, man, you know, I'm starting to look at the way the game is going, and I like the safety position, Kyle Hamilton, right? Safety is kind of a position, almost like running back, that's a little bit undervalued. But when you have like a guy that has like special traits, special ability, and you look at, you know, Kyle Hamilton, his 6'4 frame, 220 pounds, his ability to play sideline to sideline the way he is. But I think when everybody thinks about range, especially for a safety, they do think single high, sideline to sideline. I mean, he can do it from a two high. He had an interception where he started on the far hash, ran all the way across the field, made a diving interception and toe tapping. But I think for him, his range doesn't stop there. I also saw a 4th-and-2 play where he starts off as a two high safety and comes down and makes a tackle for loss. So he has this big time ability. You know, he's a little long legged. So his ability to kind of play in space in more of a match or man type coverage, there might be some questions there, but sky's the limit with the type of physical ability that this guy has and his ability to just make plays. And for me, in a game that's wide open right now in the NFL, that's really hard for you know, opposing defenses to really just shut down offenses, to be able to have a guy who can take the ball away and cover so much space, I think that's something that should be coveted, especially in the top 10 with a safety like Kyle Hamilton.
Croc, I love you brought up Kyle Hamilton, because when Tony sent me his top 10, I'm like, where the hell is Kyle Hamilton? Tony, what's going on?
Well, it's what he said about being long-legged. And you know, it's NFL right now is a game of quickness. You know, the receivers are smaller, the quarterbacks, you know, are smaller. You want that quickness. And when I watch Kyle Hamilton, yeah, I like him. Yes, I like his size. But when you watch, you know, the footwork, the ability to quickly change direction, the suddenness, it's just not there for me. The burst is just not there for me. I don't know if Kyle Hamilton's going to be a safety or they're going to let him grow into an outside linebacker at the next level. I just don't know that yet. I got to talk to more people. I like Kyle Hamilton, but that suddenness that we see from, say, we talked about Kayvon Thibodeau, granted it's a different position, I just don't see that suddenness or that great quickness. And I think with Hamilton, you know, he's the guy where, you know, Eric said there may be limitations. I don't know that you're going to put him over a slot receiver or you're going to put him in man coverage over a receiver because of that lack of quickness, the inability to kind of flip your hips. Maybe just a guy who, a Jamal Adams type, where he's got to face the action and play downhill.
All right. So I think this is a great conversation because people love Kyle Hamilton. So it seems like we're in agreement, not a guy you're going to line up over a slot receiver, correct? He doesn't have that type of moving skill. But if you want to use him as a guy that's reading at the top of the defense, which requires more straight line speed and not necessarily a change of direction against these quicker slot guys, we're in agreement that if you're going to pick a position for him now, that's probably, Croc, and we'll start with you being the former DB, is that where you think you would put him to best take advantage of his skill set?
Yeah, like he's not going to be like a Daxton Hill, right? A guy that is just really versatile in coverage. And like Tony was alluding to, the change of direction, the feet, the quicks. Daxton Hill has more of that than Kyle Hamilton. But, you know, just, again, going back to kind of covering the 49ers and seeing how they utilize their safeties. They have two terrific safeties in Jimmy Ward and Jaquiski Tartt. They're very different with their usage. Tartt, he's better in space, but he also can come down and make tackles at any time around the line of scrimmage, maybe play more zone, a little bit more match type stuff, where Jimmy Ward, yes, he's a safety. He can play two high. He can play single high, but he also is a guy that you're like, hey, I need you to go cover Cooper Kupp. And he does a tremendous job of that on a consistent basis. So you're not going to ask Kyle Hamilton to go out there and cover slots like Cooper Kupp in situations like that, at least with what the 49ers do with, and not to just Tart, you know, they drafted Hufanga, who's not the most athletically gifted safety as well. In situations like that, they roll that guy to more of a single high guy and let him kind of read and react from space as opposed to matching him up, you know, in a disadvantaged situation.
And I agree with that. But the thing is, you could probably get that type of player in this draft later on. I just don't know that. And while I like Kyle Hamilton, I just don't know that I'm taking him with the first somewhere in the top 10.
Yeah, excellent. Disagreement. This is what we like, folks. All right, Tony. Let's go to you. We've talked about Thibodeau, Hutchinson, and Neal. Who's your next guy or next couple guys, if you maybe have them in a tier or a group, that you think is going to be that next group that a team's going to look at?
Yeah, three defensive players. One I think is going to be a surprise to people. I like George Karlaftis out of Purdue. You know, again, we talked about the Giants from the 1980s. That 3-4 outside linebacker type that impacts games up the field. He's an athletic guy, former water polo player, believe it or not. Excellent pursuit, gets down the line of scrimmage. Derek Stingley. I mean, Derek Stingley is a terrific cornerback. My concerns with Derek Stingley, why I like him, is it seems that 2019 was his best football when he was a true freshman at LSU. Had a downer year in 2020, got injured this year. I like Derek Stingley. He's a cornerback. We've seen cornerbacks really rise through the draft process and go early. I think Stingley's going to go early. Just a question of which Derek Stingley are we going to get? And someone who I absolutely love, who's overshadowed by his teammate, David Ajabu of Michigan, who plays next to Aiden Hutchinson. Hutchinson gets all the highlights, but when you watch Ajabu, he's like the Kayvon Thibodeau. He's sudden. He's explosive. He plays with a violence, a natural violence in his game, a great change of direction. He does a lot of things that Hutchinson can't do because he's so much quicker and he's so much sudden. I think Ajabu is in my top 10 right now. He's going to go a lot earlier than people predict.
Real quick on a follow-up, Tony, you see Ajabu as more of an off-ball linebacker or as a guy that's on the line of scrimmage?
No, I think he can be a 3-4 linebacker that stands up over tackle, and then you can drop him into space on zone blitzes or things, or use him in the space when you want to. He's that athletic. He's that quick.
Croc, your thoughts on that group?
Yeah, you know, and I liked how he, you know, talked about, especially start with the cornerback group, and you have Derek Stingley Jr. You know, he has a good size, 6'1", 190 pounds. He's definitely going to test well. He's a guy that they were thinking about letting him play both sides of the ball, and that was one of the agreements that they had going into his freshman year. Hey, eventually you'll play receiver. Unfortunately, the injuries kind of slowed him down a little bit, and there started to just be more and more questions. You know, I still have some questions just about, you know, how good is he on a high upside side of things. You know, you look at some of the games and matchups he had against Devontae Smith, and I know Devontae Smith, a terrific receiver, but in every game that he played against Derek Stingley, he kind of had his way, whether it was intermediate routes, whether it was vertically pushing routes, whether it was winning at the catch point. He did all those things against Derek Stingley to show that on a consistent basis. So there were some questions that I had, and I wanted to get those answers over the following 2 years, but we just never got those and because of the injuries. And then when you talk about, I liked how he brought up Karlaftis, the edge rusher from Purdue. You know, that's a bigger body guy. I think, you know, some of the things I saw right away that jumped out, his first step is tremendous. Being able to get upfield right now, being able to be explosive. I think off of that, I would like to see a little bit more bend and be able to change direction a little bit. It was kind of like one speed where it's like, yes, I explode off the line, but then, dang, okay, what's my counter to that? And I didn't see that as well as maybe some of the other guys. And again, in my head, I'm comparing them to guys like Thibodeau that definitely has that bend to be able to explode off with the first step in the bend. And that's why he's going to be probably the first overall pick as opposed to Karlaftis. We'll see how far he falls down. But as far as being a, you know, a top 10, top 15 guy, I think he's definitely that.
Interesting. Ajabu, you mentioned him being an off-ball guy. You think he can be a little bit more of a pass rusher. Anyone else on the defensive side of the ball, Tony, that you really like as a potential top 10 pick?
I think Devin Lloyd, the linebacker from Utah, is very underrated. A true three-down linebacker. You know, we talk about the Aiden Hutchinsons and these guys who make plays behind the line of scrimmage. Devin Lloyd did a good job of that at Utah. But he's also a guy who gets tremendous depth on his pass drop. He's explosive in pursuit. There was a wide variety of opinions from scouts on Devin Lloyd coming into the season. Some had him graded as a seventh round pick, while others stamped him as a mid first rounder.
Wow.
When you watch the film, he's a guy that plays sideline to sideline. He's good in coverage. He's explosive, but he also makes a ton of plays behind the line of scrimmage. And he's done it for 3 years. I mean, Devin Lloyd could have come out last year and been an early pick. He decides to go back and just improved his game week in and week out. This guy comes to play. And again, you know, we talk about pass rushing linebackers, off the ball linebackers. This cat can do it all.
You know, talking about guys, and this guy might not be a top 10 guy, but just a guy that I really like, especially at the cornerback position, Roger McCreary out of Auburn.
Yeah.
When you look at a guy and how they utilize him and how they challenge him, you put on the film against Alabama. And yeah, there were times he got beat, but you know, that's going to happen sometimes when you are playing extremely aggressive with the style and tasks that they put on him. You know, having to follow guys like Jameson Williams and Mechie play inside, play outside. You know, I like cornerbacks. One of the first things I look at is, you know, are you just a pure outside guy? Do you have some nickel ability? And not because I want you to play nickel, but just, hey, if there's a receiver where I want you to play man on this guy and be able to kind of follow him and shadow him wherever he lines up, do you have the ability to do that? I thought he did. And he was able to challenge guys underneath. I mean, I feel like, I need to tally this. I feel like Alabama, because he was guarding their two guys, they targeted him maybe 15 times in that game. And you can see by the end of it, he was gassed. He ended up giving up the game when he touched him. But just overall, and what I'm looking for from a prospect, especially from a defensive back, the feet, the change of direction, the ability to run with guys vertically, I thought he did a terrific job of that. And then you go back a year prior to that and watch how he, you know, covered a guy like Ja'Marr Chase and how he challenged him. And again, throughout routes, I mean, just getting hands on, he was not afraid of him. He carried him in over routes, on slants, also vertically. Now, there was a play he gave up down the sideline that resulted in a touchdown that he gave up against Chase, but then also came back and had an interception in the same area. So big time ability. I love the competitor that he is. I think that's a guy, he probably won't go top 10, but he should go in the next 10 picks. And, you know, everybody's talking about Stingley. They're talking about Booth. But I think a guy like Roger McCreary should be inserted into that conversation as well.
Well, McCreary's a good player, without a doubt. He's got terrific ball skills. He's smart. He's tough. Question about McCreary is speed, downfield speed. I mean, he plays like a guy who's in the low 4.5s, which is going to push him down draft boards. And you mentioned it. Had struggled against the two Alabama kids, struggled against Ja'Marr Chase, all guys that can get vertical, and he was not able to cover him down the field. I like McCreary. I think he can play in man. I also think he can play in zone. But I think the difference between McCreary going mid-first round and maybe falling later on will be his 40 time at the combine.
Yeah. And I'm interested to see that because I thought he covered them well vertically. There were like about four times where they threw slot fades on them. And each time I feel like they all fell incomplete. And that's one of the hardest routes to guard from pure man coverage. And you don't really have help with all that space where he was able to squeeze guys and still play the ball at the catch point. So I thought he showed enough speed. But yeah, I agree in the sense of being a top 20 guy, he's definitely going to have to show that he has that speed on paper that some of these teams are going to covet. Otherwise, you start to fall in kind of that Mike Hughes kind of category where he was a guy who wasn't the biggest guy and also didn't test as well. And you see he's kind of bouncing around the NFL at an early stage in his career.
Yeah, no question about it. The testing, the 40 times for those corners, always, you know, a big deal when you figure out, you know, Cameron Dantzler is another guy, right? A lot of people thought he was the top pick, and then his 40 time was a disaster. And then he obviously dropped. All right, let's look at a couple of the guys that are in your top 10 here, Tony. Three skill position guys, and I'll address them as a group, and then you guys can take this in whatever direction you want and go back and forth. You like the two Ohio State receivers, Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson, and you have a tight end in here, Jalen Weidermeyer out of Texas A&M. Tell us about those three guys, Croc, then you can take it, and if you want to add anybody else into that top group of skill guys, you can do that too. Tone.
I mean, Weidermeyer is not Kyle Pitts, but he's a terrific pass-catching tight end. He's an athletic guy. He gets down the field. He plays the tight end position like a big possession receiver, gets up for the gets up in a crowd, comes away with the difficult reception. Just a lot of natural receiving skills. Not a bad blocker, but they don't really ask him to block that all that much. I like his upside. I think he's going to go very early. You know, the two Ohio State receivers, it's kind of ironic because especially Chris Olave was kind of the odd man out this year with the freshman quarterback. But Olave is a legitimate vertical threat. He is a guy that can take it deep. He's a guy that you know, opposing safeties are going to have to take a step or two backwards when he's on the field, but he's also a good underneath receiver. He's a good intermediate pass catcher. Wilson is more your possession guy, although he's got some deep speed, not as much as Olave, but he's a guy that can go over the middle, win out for the contested catch, run solid routes, separates through route running, which is all important these days in the NFL. Really a dynamic duo coming out of Ohio State that has consistently put real good receivers in the NFL.
Yeah, I think when you talk about Garrett Wilson, you know, I always look at guys, and he's not the biggest of guys, right? He doesn't have this huge frame, but I always ask this question, like, you know, one thing that I require from guys that aren't huge, like, can you play big? And what I mean by that is, you know, when the ball's in the air at the catch point, do you have the ability to go up and get it? And I think he does that as good as anybody in this class. There are some receivers in this class, like a Drake London, who's 6'5", and, okay, he has good body control, and he's able to shield away defenders. But you watch Garrett Wilson go up, I think he goes up with the same ability to do some of those things, but just in a smaller frame, as well as give you the, you know, the ability, you know, to run after catch, the ability to get in and out of breaks, the shiftiness, the quickness. I think he has like those loose, oily hips. So Garrett Wilson, definitely a guy who I really like. You know, like Tony said, not as fast as Olave, who I think Olave is probably more smooth than sudden or twitchy as opposed to Garrett. But I think they both bring a good, you know, just element, passing game, stretching the field to an offense. Olave, he missed Justin Fields a little bit, you know, who was throwing him those deep balls, being able to stretch the field and just get behind secondaries. And the way he got behind Clemson, consistently just outrunning guys who were already in off coverage, I thought that was tremendous. Didn't see it quite as much, but I thought you definitely saw more than enough as far as a pure receiver. And, you know, another guy who he didn't mention in this, and he just – towards ACL, so we'll see what happens with him. Also, a former Ohio State receiver who had an explosive season at Alabama. I think he was just as good as anybody as well, just his ability to catch a slant, take it to the house. And we know with the spread offenses that are going on in the NFL right now, having the ability to be able to win at all levels the way that Williams was, that was exciting to see. It's crazy that he was a guy at Ohio State and wasn't able to get on the field or get the targets as much as some of the other guys there that you just talked about, Garrett Wilson and Olave.
Yeah, that's Jamison Williams, who tore his ACL in that national championship game, unfortunately. Anybody else, guys, from that skill position group that you think could inch their way into the top 10, depending on testing or senior bowl, anything like that, that you guys really like?
Top 10, no. But, I mean, the bottom half of round one, maybe Jahan Dotson of Penn State, who was a terrific receiver. A guy who's got solid deep speed, but is a real good pass catcher. You know, Eric talked about playing big. Watch Jahan Dotson. I mean, competes to come away with a difficult catch, does not back down to a challenge. Not top 10, but I could see Jahan Dotson going somewhere late in round one. You're looking for a day two guy who I absolutely love. Sorry, Eric. I know we're talking about top 10. Keep an eye on Isaiah Likely, the tight end from Coastal Carolina. I've watched this kid for the past 2 years. You can't help but not watch this guy. 6'4 and a half, 245 pounds. He's making 75-yard receptions. He's running away from defensive backs. The kid is outstanding. Going to be at the Senior Bowl. Going to be a lot of fun to watch. And again, you know, tight end needy teams, day two, a guy like Isaiah Likely fits the bill.
You know, I'm curious where people are going to have Treylon Burks. You know, that's a 6'3", 230-pound receiver. And, you know, initially when you watch him, you're like, man, this is kind of like A.J. Brown all over again in an actual, like, little bit bigger frame as far as height goes. And he has the ability to win at the catch point. He doesn't come off as fast because he's not just this twitchy type guy. But when he catches the ball and gets in the open field, he outruns defenders. So if he is a guy that runs as well as some people think, with that type of size and ability and versatility, I think he might be a guy that kind of shoots up draft boards. Top 10, that might be a little too rich, but, you know, around, you know, 15 to 20, I could see a team like maybe like the Saints or somebody that are like, hey, we want a guy with this dynamic ability. Another guy that might help him is, again, go back to the 49ers, Deebo Samuel, who is kind of a jack of all trades. And when you watch Treylon Burks, they utilize him in the backfield. They use him and line him up next to the quarterback and motion him out and do a lot of different things with him. I think, you know, he just has this big time ability, but that testing is going to come down to that. And if he runs as well as people think, I hear a lot of people think he's going to run in the 4.3s. I don't know about that because it's hard to tell on film with how big he is. But when you see him separate from defenders, you think, yeah, that could be a possibility. And at that frame, that could possibly shoot him up some boards.
Interesting. All right, guys, we've kind of talked about the top of the class here. Let's talk about depth. you know, the Giants are going to have 5 picks in the first 81. Once you get past their 2 top 10 picks, you know, number 5 and number 7, where are some of the spots on day 2 of this draft where you, you know, you really make your money and that's where you get a lot of your starters that you think you're going to find a lot of depth at some of these spots where, you know, if you're trying to fill out your roster and find some good solid starters and on day 2, where are you going to find them? Tony, why don't we start with you?
Well, as I mentioned, tight ends is a real deep class from rounds 2 through really rounds 5. We'll see if the Giants are looking in that direction. As I mentioned, I like the offensive tackle class, and, you know, the Giants probably could use 4 offensive linemen to line up next to Andrew Thomas. So there would be some real good offensive tackles in day 2 for the Giants. Outside linebackers, a deep, pretty deep class. I also like the safety class as well in days 2 and early part of day 3.
How about you, Croc?
Yeah, definitely. I think day 2 is going to be a really strong day for the cornerbacks, especially high in day 2. Looking at guys like Sauce Gardner, you know, his counterpart in Kobe Bryant, Trent McDuffie, you know, some of these corners, Kyra Elam out of Florida, he's a guy I really like when watching his film and seeing, you know, his technique and then his size and ability off of that. So the cornerback to me, cornerback position, I think that's going to be a rich day 2. You know, maybe not as high day 1. You have guys like Stingley. I know people are really high on Booth, but day 2, look out for the cornerbacks. I think there's going to be a run on those guys.
There always seems to be a run on cornerbacks in recent years, top of that second round. You get to day 2, people have that night to go home and they sleep on and they're like, we better start grabbing these corners because it's a passing league now.
Well, you know, the thing is, this is, you know, let's forget about quarterback for a while. You asked how long I've been in the draft business. It's always been left tackle, cornerback, pass rushers were always priority positions in the NFL draft. But what happens is some of these guys, like the cornerbacks, get pushed down because quarterbacks go so early and oftentimes are overdrafted. So that's why you get good value late in the first round, early in the second round.
Do you guys feel that cornerbacks are what I would consider a high-risk position where – you can watch them on tape, depending on scheme and competition in college. It's difficult to figure out how they're going to transfer. Because I think with the way NFL and college schemes have kind of coalesced into sort of one thing now, we kind of know what wide receivers are, right? If a wide receiver is really good in college, he's probably going to be a pretty good pro, assuming he tests well. Croc, how do you view that in terms of evaluating a cornerback and trying to determine how he's going to translate into the NFL? Is it really dependent on whether or not he's put in the correct scheme so that he can succeed? How do you view that?
You know, I think the quarterback position is just really hard to play, especially in today's day, the way that they call pass interference, illegal contact. You can't be as aggressive with receivers. You know, they're playing in more space, and these coaches are getting really good at scheming up against defensive backs and putting them in vulnerable positions. So, you know, the cornerback position, you can be good all game, and then you get beat one time, and it's like, oh, he can't play, especially from an outside perspective. I think you'd see teams are a little bit more patient with cornerbacks and the development of them, but fans, not so much, because a lot of times when you notice them, they are giving up a catch. But, you know, you look at guys like Trevon Diggs, who, you know, Giants, I'm pretty sure you guys have seen a lot of him. He had 11 interceptions, but also he's given up over 1,000 yards. So you have to kind of pick your poison with what you want. You want a playmaker, or do you feel like you want to shut down guy? And if you want to shut down guy, I mean, there's just not many of those guys throughout the entire league. And most of the guys that you do think are quote unquote shut down, a lot of those guys are going to beat. Now, even if we're talking about how cornerbacks are being prioritized now, look what the Rams have done with Jalen Ramsey. This has been one of the premier cornerbacks in the NFL. And they said, you know what? We want more usage of him and be able to use his ability. So we're going to put him in that star position. We're going to play him more of a nickel and kind of leave him on the field and have him play more in space. So I think the cornerback position is just a tough one. And it just depends on how you view it and what you want consistently, you know, and also scheme has a lot to do with the two. Are you going to play more of a two high system? If you are, then maybe you don't need as, you know, quite as much elite physically capable cornerbacks, as opposed to if you play more single high, you better have guys on the outside that can hold their own.
Yeah. I also think a lot of technique has to do a lot with it, because what happens in the college game is they're able to get by with poor techniques. You know, if they defend the pass, you know, you see these guys side shuffling, moseying down the field. Can't do that in the NFL. You got to learn to backpedal, flip your hips in transition without missing a beat. You see guys in the college game constantly face guarding, playing the receiver's hands rather than playing the ball when it's in the air. You can't do that in the NFL or you're going to get smoked. We've seen time and time again, these highly rated cornerbacks that guys that are going the first round, going top 45, yet they never got their head back around to locate the pass in the air in college, although they had a ton of interceptions or a ton of pass defenses. You can't do that. You got to learn to make plays with your back to the ball, and a lot of college cornerbacks don't do that well in college and can never get the hang of it in the NFL.
No question about it.
And I think there is something with the development aspect of it in, like, as you alluded to, with the technique. Colleges, a lot of times, if you watch them, unless you're watching the SEC, you know, they're just playing guys off. Look at Trent McDuffie. I still don't even know what he is, because every game I've seen, he's playing 10 yards off. He's playing safe. He's playing zone, and he's just dropping back. There's not a whole lot of press coverage to be able to see his hips, his movement ability, and see how he's challenged with, you know, being able to get his head around, right? 49ers cornerback had Ambry Thomas had an interception in the game against the Rams. And everybody's saying, oh, he got his head around. Well, I'm like, well, he was in off-cover zone. His head was around the whole time. He's looking at the quarterback. That was the ball is thrown. You know, Trent McDuffie, you know, how often does he have to man turn and then play guys vertically down the field and then look to get his head around? So those things as well are kind of interesting to see how they play out in the transition for guys like a McDuffie into the NFL, because there is a lot of soft coverage and where guys are just lining up. And then, you know, to kind of talk about that with just the soft coverage and kind of what goes into that college, most teams are kind of just lining up and they clap their hands and they run their play. NFL, there's a lot of motions. There's a lot of tight splits. There's a bunch of formations. Every single thing that somebody does, there's a reaction to it, and your responsibility can change from a cornerback perspective. And you're not used to that at the collegiate level. And then now it's like, man, okay, in cover three sky, I have this. But in a fire zone, I have this. But in man, I have this. And there's so many different things you have to do from that same bunch formation that some of these college guys aren't running. Then they get to the league and their head is spinning. So those are things that a lot of guys kind of have to worry about. You have to figure out how good are they maybe on the board and we're processing things. Because if you can't process fast in the NFL, you're not going to play fast and you're not going to have a chance to be good.
You know, Croc, it's funny. The one I've used this quote, I've totally stolen it from you. I apologize. When you came on the show last year, you said sometimes these college corners going into the pros and trying to get the mental part down, it's like trying to drink water out of a fire hose. And it's so much coming at you, and it's just going so fast you can't handle it. And I love the quote because I do think you see that.
Yep. No, definitely. There's a lot. And I think depending on the level that you play at, Alabama guys, I remember being a rookie with D. Milliner. You know, he was used to the verbiage. He was used to that. He got coached by Nick Saban. But some of these other guys that come from some of these programs where they're just like, hey, we're going to play a cover four. We're going to play quarters and have your butt to the sideline. And we're going to simplify everything for you. They get to the NFL and there's definitely more of a learning curve.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. And the one guy I'll mention in this conversation, and boy, I can't even remember his name. Ohio State corner. Detroit, rough first year out for the
Okuda,
year.
Jeffrey Okuda.
Thank you. He was one of those guys, Tony, when you watch the tape at Ohio State, you know, ton of cover three. He would kind of sidestep back a little bit, never really had to turn
not
and
a press
activate.
Bill.
And then they tried to play him a lot of press in Detroit in his first year. And look, I don't want to be rough on the kid, but it was a disaster. It didn't go well. And I think, I think that's probably a pretty good example of like what you're talking about. Right, Croc?
Yeah. His strengths were press bail. I thought from a press bail standpoint, he read down concepts from there as well as anybody. But there weren't a whole lot of just pure man reps where he had the shadow guys. He started off in the press alignment a lot, right. But that didn't necessarily mean that he was playing man coverage. And I think a lot of people had kind of had that confused. So when he went to Detroit, okay, great. You want to draft a cornerback that high? I don't know. But if you are going to, and you ask him to play man coverage because that's what you did with Darius Slay, and you had Slay's shadow guys, I don't know if that's necessarily going to be Okuda's game. And as we saw as a rookie, he had a rough time with it. And I was interested to see how does he, you know, develop as, you know, as his career goes on and work into year two. And in the first game, he goes down with an injury where he's out for the whole year after being beat for like a 75-yard touchdown from Deebo Samuel. So there's still a lot going on with him and transitioning into the NFL while they're asking him to play a different style of defense.
All right, guys, final question before we wrap it up here. Really, really nice setup for the draft process. Excellent job. Just based on what I'm hearing, and you guys tell me if my impression is wrong based on what you guys are saying. You know, I go back to last year's draft as an example, and we talked about, you know, players that there were no questions about, right? Everyone knew Trevor Lawrence was fantastic. Ja'Marr Chase, there was no question he was a top 10 player. You know, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, high-level prospects. Micah Parsons, high-level prospect. Patrick Surtain, high-level prospect. And we feel really good about a lot of those guys in the top 10. You feel good, you're going to get a really good player. is my sense wrong that there aren't as many of those guys in this class at that same just pure, highly graded level? And maybe in the top 10, there are more guys that you're taking more risks on, or am I interpreting this incorrectly?
Tony. I think you're absolutely right. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think it's Kayvon Thibodeau, Aiden Hutchinson, and then everyone else, you know, has got questions. I mean, Olave, how big, you know, is he big enough? Or where are you going to play him? Everyone else has questions. I mean, you usually, when you break down the draft board, you usually want 18 to 24 guys that have solid first round grades. That means that, you know, they are definite first round picks. Right now, I've got 14, and I'm struggling to get more than 14, which kind of tells you that, you know, the top of this draft is not going to be very strong, which kind of goes into what you're saying. Gets a little bit better when starting in day two, as far as I'm concerned.
Now, yeah, Kroc, real quick, I want to follow up with Tony real fast. So how many top 10 grades do you have on your board, Tony, in a normal draft class?
Usually you're looking at 5 to 7 guys that would be, you know, surefire top 10 picks. This year, I'm looking at 2, Thibodeau and Hutchinson. I don't think Neal in a normal draft is a top 10 guy. Carl Laftis, as much as I like him, I don't think is a top 10 guy. You could probably put Stingley in there. But again, you know, as Eric was saying, as I was saying, you know, Stingley the last 2 years has been injured. He struggled. He really has not developed into that dominant cornerback that we saw in 2019 as a true freshman at LSU. So I think right now you're looking at 2 guys that in any draft is the easier way to say it, would be top 10 picks.
All right, Giant fans, don't head to the George Washington Bridge yet. Eric, give me your thoughts on that, generally speaking, in terms of top 10 guys.
Yeah, I think what we're saying is there's not those blue chippers, right? And if you look at in previous years, especially in the top 10, you know, an influx of quarterbacks being overdrafted pushes guys down the board. So you end up with, you know, being a Dallas Cowboy team that gets a Micah Parsons, you know, at pick 11 or 12 or wherever they got him. Or in previous years, you know, guys like, the safety for out of Florida State, that Derwin James,
yeah.
You know, a guy that's a blue chipper, and he ends up going like pick 17 or pick 18 because of, maybe quarterbacks that are being overdrafted. And we've seen that last year as well. Well, you're not going to have that this year. And if there's not those true blue chippers, you know, in the top 10, I think that makes it a rougher kind of first round as far as the draft goes.
Guys, this is going to basically measure the metal and how good your scouting staffs and your general manager is, because now, you know, you got to do it every draft, but now, you know, you really got to do your homework, which you do every draft, but now it's a little bit more difficult because you don't have those dominant, outstanding, knockout, surefire, not that there is such a thing as a surefire player in the draft, surefire type prospect staring you in the face.
So this is my closing question, then, because I think you guys make great points. Does this mean more movement with trades in the top of the draft because boards are going to be so different? One general manager might value another player a lot more than another, or are these teams going to say, I don't feel strongly enough about any of these guys, or I want to try to move up the boards?
Well, I mean, we still got to wait and see which juniors, I mean, we're talking here and juniors still have to declare. I don't think there's going to be that much movement. There's not a lot of quarterbacks. If there's movement, I think there'll be movement more. Teams want to move down and maybe willing to take less to move down, as opposed to teams that are clamoring to get to the top of the draft.
I think the one thing I'm looking forward to seeing is just how much does guys like Mel Kiper and what he's seeing in his rankings, or Todd McShay, how well does that match up with what the NFL is thinking? Because maybe there aren't just the pure blue chippers where you can say, well, I know these are the top 10 guys. You can't really say that this year. I think there's going to be a lot of disparity between what guys think. So I'm curious to see how that whole thing plays out.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, public perception's big in this whole sort of thing. And, you know, the draft process sometimes takes on a bigger role than the actual game tape, which is a problem. We could talk about that. Hopefully you will see these two guys again as we move forward in the draft process. Tony Pauline, Eric Kroc, great job, fellas. We really appreciate the time as always, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Hopefully real soon.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that's Tony and Eric Crocker. We thank you for joining us on the Giants Huddle podcast again. Giants.com, the Giants mobile app podcast platform. So if you're on Apple Podcasts, 5-star positive review. tell a friend that's a Giants fan or just a draft fan about the podcast. We do a lot of draft stuff coming up here with our Giants Podcast Network. For Tony and Eric, I'm Schmelk. We'll see you next time, everybody.